Natural Living with Gary Nall, Mondays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we'll be looking at health trends for 2011 with Mike Adams. And he is one of the more important voices of the generation after me to have emerged in alternative medicine health issues. Earlier, he was immersed in the common mindset of most Americans, living a high-powered life under extreme stress and depression. And at the age of 30, was diagnosed with diabetes type 2. And after embracing alternative medicine and a healthy lifestyle, he cured himself in several months and has dedicated his life to mind-body medicine and natural healing and researching the underlying cause of disease. He's also the founder of naturalnews.com. We're going to talk about the latest on health and healing. We're also going to look at how it is that the media almost never challenges the corporate spin and lies by Rose Aguilar from commondreams.org. Let's begin, and I will set time aside for calls a little later on in our program. This is the cough season. Lots of people have coughs. What are some of the natural remedies? Not that simple, not that complicated. Meaning that you have to give up what's causing some of your inflammation, like dairy products and wheat and alcohol. But then also, how about adding honey and lime juice to a warm glass of water with some cayenne pepper? How about putting a clove in your mouth? That's good. And also slicing fresh ginger and having that into a tea or a juice. That's also good. Simple remedies, along with vitamin C and quercetin. Echinacea, yes. And podiarco, absolutely. And astragalus, it only helps. Natural remedies for cough or flu. That blackberry in your pocket is bad for health. Why? According to the latest research, the BlackBerry Torch advises using its, quote, approved holster with an integrated belt clip or maintain a distance of 25 millimeters between the BlackBerry device and your body while the BlackBerry device is transmitting. That's according to news.com. Quote, use of body-worn accessories other than RIM-approved holsters with an integrated belt clip might cause your BlackBerry device to exceed radio frequency exposure standards. The long-term effects of exceeding these standards might present serious harm, unquote. Meanwhile, Australia's largest mobile retailer, Telstra, would publish comparison data on mobile's specific absorption rate earlier next month, so we'll find out what's going on there. But for all of us, understand that when you're using a cell phone of any type, doesn't matter what the brand, it is taking its signal from a satellite. Now, just imagine being in a tunnel or in a building. It has to penetrate that. And then it has to go into that headset. Now you're listening, and it's going into your brain, and it's adversely affecting your chromosomes. It's overheating the brain, and that can cause a lot of free radicals and damage that causes inflammation. So just be aware that if you're going to have a cell phone, keep it on speaker or use what is called a Bluetooth so that you're away from the actual device. Pesticide used in California salad bowl growing regions destroying health of workers. This is from Jonathan Benson, and it says that the pesticide residues found on just conventional fruits and vegetables have now been shown to be harmful to health. But what about the people who pick this produce and the children they bear? According to a recent study, field workers and their children who live in the Salinas Valley of California, also known as the World Salad Bowl, because of its massive produce exports, are experiencing significant developmental and other health problems as a result of continual pesticide exposure. Professor Brenda Exenes and her colleagues, University of California, Berkeley, began a study 12 years ago on the effects of long-term pesticide exposure in both migrant workers and in the local population that lives around the Salinas Valley. And they focused really on pregnant women and their children. And upon tracking pregnant women throughout their pregnancies and taking umbilical cord blood samples of their newborn children and evaluating childhood development in subsequent years, the team observed that children born to mothers that were most exposed to pesticide metabolites had the poorest development among all the children. Quote, "We have very, very high reports by the mothers of behaviors consistent with pervasive developmental disorder." That's according to the Neurotoxicology Conference. These signs include when the child is afraid of new things, can't stand anyone, anything out of place, avoids looking others in the eyes. This is considered to be autism spectrum behavior. So what this means is that those children who were living around this area and whose parents were harvesting the fruits and vegetables now have really bad health. I don't think it should have taken 12 years to get this out to everyone's attention. That's rather common knowledge. City politician wants the removal of fluoride from New York City's drinking water, citing safety concerns. This is from the New York Daily News, City Hall Bureau, and it says, four decades after New York started adding fluoride to its water, a city councilman, armed with new research, is launching a campaign to stop the practice. Quote, "This amounts to forced medicalization by the government." That's according to Peter Vallone, Democrat of Queens, who plans to introduce fluoride removal legislation at the next council meeting. What's next? They decide we're depressed and add Prozac to our drinking water? The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention hails the addition of fluoride to drinking water as one of the 10 greatest public health achievements of the 20th century. They claim it helps to drastically reduce tooth decay. The CDC touts its research on its website. Well, about 72% of Americans drink fluoridated water. However, there's an enormous amount of challenge to it. Now, what I've done is I've put up on my website, GaryNall.com, it's up there today, an article entitled "The Fluoride Fiasco." It has over 250 scientific references. It shows you everything about fluoride from good science, independent science. A, fluoride does not prevent tooth decay, so we were sold a lie. B, fluoride does adversely affect our health in as little as one part per million, the amount you would find in an average glass of water. And this has been known for some time. One of the people I interviewed at the very beginning of my career was a Dr. Dean Burke, who was one of the founders of the National Cancer Institute and was the head of its cytochemistry division for a long time. Dr. Burke wrote a paper. It was co-authored with Dr. John Yamianis, and in it they showed that 30,000 Americans die each year from cancer that was caused by the drinking of fluoride in the water. All those earlier studies were completely dismissed by the pro-fluoride advocates. Now, we have an enormous body of evidence that fluoride is not safe and it's not healthy. So, good for you, Peter Vallone, and if someone in this audience would be good enough to get a copy, download a copy of my definitive article on fluoride, and send it to Peter Vallone. My article was just updated the other day, so it's absolutely current 2011 statistics. And all of you should take the time to read it, because otherwise, here's what happens. Someone appears in the media, generally a governmental official, saying, of course fluoride is safe and effective. They'll say the same thing about vaccines and medications of every type. And you won't have a corresponding challenge to it. The journalist will not do their homework. They will never challenge official position. And that leads me to the next issue, and that is why. Why is it we are lied to all the time, and we don't have the advocates, in except for rare occasion, saying, hold on a second, you don't have your facts straight. Let me just share this. I'm sure you're all familiar with MSNBC's Chris Matthews. Matthews had a segment on recently, the five biggest political lies of 2010. PolitiFact gave the top prize to Republicans and pundits who repeatedly lied and got away with it by calling the health care bill a government takeover. Now, after showing multiple clips of Republicans repeating the same lie over and over again, Matthews could barely contain his laughter. Quote, are we watching a Woody Allen movie here? He asked his guests. Do they get all their talking points from Frank Luntz, some guy down on the beach in Santa Monica is knocking out the terminology, the lingo in these people? Don't they know they sound like parrots? Unquote. Former San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown replied by saying that Republicans get away with these lies because they are never challenged during the interviews or asked to define the word takeover. Matthews ignored the comment, but did say the health care bill is an insurance company takeover. He later wondered if the Heritage Foundation wrote the talking points. They actually came from Wendell Potter and his health insurance colleagues. Potter is former head of corporate communications of Cigna, one of the largest for-profit health insurance companies in the United States. Potter, who spent 20 years working for Cigna and Humana, was the main media contact for top-level executives. If a journalist wanted to interview anyone, well, they go through Potter. If he thought the interviews would be friendly, he would approve it. He always sat in on the interview and says journalists rarely challenge executives or ask difficult questions. In 2008, his conscience got the best of him after visiting the remote area medical's healthcare fair in Wise County, Virginia. And there he saw standing and sitting in long lines waiting for free care. Quote, they were treating people in animal stalls and barns. It looked like it might have been a war-torn country. I cannot believe this was the United States of America. Shortly after leaving his six-figure job, he decided to expose and speak out against the very practices he once defended. He wrote a book, Deadly Spin. An insurance company insider speaks out on how corporate public relations is killing healthcare and deceiving Americans. He writes, quote, if you're among those who believe that the United States has the best healthcare system in the world, despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary, it's because my fellow spinmeisters and I succeeded brilliantly at what we were paid very, very well to do with your premium dollars. And if you were persuaded that the health care bill President Barack Obama signed into law in March 2010 was a government takeover of the health care system, my former colleagues and I earned every penny of our handsome salaries. The talking points are designed to be simple, catchy, and memorable. Think government takeover of healthcare, death panels, and socialism. And you have to say them over and over and over again. And if you hear them often enough, you think it's true. That's why people, even today, think that the legislation created death panels. Obviously, it never had anything approaching that kind of provision. People just think this legislation is a government takeover of the healthcare system. In reality, it props up our private health insurance industry. It guarantees that these private insurance companies are going to be profitable for years and years to come. It will require us to buy their products, and it doesn't include a public option, which we needed to have. Potter says that once the talking points are written, they are distributed on Capitol Hill. The process is simple, but it's done discreetly. You don't hand them to a member of Congress, but you develop very good relationships with staff members. That's the key. He says he also cultivated relationships with television producers and reporters who in turn hand them to pundits and talking heads on cable shows. As we now know, the lies work brilliantly. Potter says he wrote Deadly Spin to show how a huge share of healthcare premiums bankroll relentless propaganda and lobbying efforts focused on protecting profits. The book is as much about public relations and spin as it is about health care. Without basic knowledge of public relation tactics and ability to distinguish between fact and distortion, Americans, and that includes journalists, both professional and citizen, are at the mercy of spin doctors and the public relations practitioners whose loyalties to their clients outweighs the public's right to the truth. And one of the many incidents that pushed Potter to speak out happened in early 2009. White House Health Care Summit, at which Karen Ignatia, president of the insurance lobby and America's health insurance plans, told President Obama he could count on her in the insurance industry, quote, "We want to work with the members of Congress on a bipartisan basis here. You have our commitment. We hear the American people about what's not working. We've taken that seriously. You have our commitment to play, to contribute, and to help pass health care reform this year." Potter says it was one of her best performances to date. President Obama responded by saying, "Good, thank you, Karen. That's good news that America's health insurance plans want to work with us." According to Potter, she is one of America's most effective communicators, and she gets paid $1.9 million a year, one of the highest paid special interest advocates in Washington. According to a recent Bloomberg report, her group, whose members include Cigna and Humana, gave $86 million to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to oppose the health care bill. Quote, "By funneling money through the chamber, insurers were able to remain at the table negotiating with Democrats while still getting the bill criticized." On March 9, 2009, MSNBC's Chris Matthews interviewed Mike Tufan, one of the executive vice presidents of this major effort. And in the introduction, Matthews says, quote, "The same people who helped kill the Clinton efforts back in the 90s are on the other side now. Times have changed." Well, there's no doubt about it. Tufan was on the show as part of the charm offensive, writes Potter. And just like Obama, Matthews seemed to be falling for it. And Potter also writes about Healthcare America, a so-called nonpartisan nonprofit healthcare front group formed to discredit Michael Moore and his healthcare documentary, Sicko. A quick search would show that there was nothing nonpartisan about Healthcare America. It was set up by APCO Worldwide, one of the country's largest, most powerful public relations firms. Not only did APCO succeed in getting their talking points in most of the stories that appeared about the film, writes Potter, but not a single reporter had done enough investigative work to find out that insurers had provided the lion's share of funding to set up Healthcare America. Potter says that even though the health insurance bill was passed, the health insurance industry and banks and weapons manufacturers and oil companies won't lose their power until their lies are challenged and the public understands how spin and manipulation works. "We will never be free of spin, but we can be wise to it." And I would agree with that. I see it all the time. I saw it when the CDC was dancing all these parrots forward to say that vaccine for the flu was good for you, would save lives. All the while, there was a 1,700% increase in stillbirth miscarriages by the women who had gotten the flu vaccine who were pregnant. And the latest studies showed that it did not help children, pregnant women, or the elderly. Well, you wouldn't know that if you watched the talking heads on television. I'm Gary Nall, and in a moment, we'll go over and say hello to our guest, Mike Adams. Please stay with us.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, "What will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich?" Here's what she said to me. What will be, will be.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go over now and say hello to Mike Adams. I did an extensive introduction a little earlier. Nice to have you with us today, Mike.
Hello there, Gary. It's good to be with you. Thanks for having me back on.
Good. Mike, what I'd like for you to do is I'd like for you to go through some of the different areas that you have concern about from this past year and look forward to what you see happening in the new year on all the different areas that you find issues are challenging and where we're winning and where we're losing as far as the consumer in all of this.
Okay, that's a really, really good question. I think we're winning in several key areas, including GMOs. There's a lot of awareness now about the potential dangers of GMOs, and even a recent WikiLeaks cable revealed some of the strategies that the United States is using in concert with the GMO companies to try to push GMOs into European countries that are resisting that push. So that was rather enlightening, and I think this all is going to head us toward a time when public awareness will demand that GMOs be labeled on foods. And once that happens, I think that's the beginning of the end of GMOs in our grocery products, at least if they follow the rules of labeling. So that's an area of some success. Another area is in mercury fillings, or what are known as, of course, silver fillings or amalgam in the dental industry. There were hearings recently, I believe in early December, and the FDA is now up against irrefutable evidence of harm from mercury fillings. Obviously, as your listeners know, mercury is a very toxic heavy metal with very dangerous implications for neurological health. And you can no longer justify putting mercury fillings in the mouths of children and expectant mothers, just to mention two groups in particular, once you're aware of this information. So I see mercury fillings eventually being banned even by the FDA, at least in those two groups, if not the wider population at large, perhaps a few years down the road. Now, there are several areas where we are not winning in terms of health freedom and natural health. I'm concerned about the recent food safety bill, the Food Safety Modernization Act. What concerns me is some of the language in the bill, which does mention on page 195 of the bill that the FDA must consider how and whether the United States should be harmonized with requirements under Codex Alimentarius, which, as you know, can set limits on nutritional supplements, limits that effectively take away much of the beneficial or the therapeutic doses from the industry, thereby denying consumers their choice to choose those supplements that they may be using to help support immune system or prevent degenerative disease and so on. I also see some concerns in the area of internet freedom. I think much of this is a backlash against WikiLeaks, which is still, it's going to cause shockwaves throughout the world throughout 2011 and beyond. But the backlash to that is that governments are beginning to look at ways to control the content of the internet. For example, the U.S. Department or Customs Department has seized many websites, I think 76 websites that they seized, that they saw as being engaged in piracy. And that seems fine on the surface. I'm not in favor of intellectual piracy either, although, of course, the drug companies pirate molecules from nature all the time. I guess that's another show. But the idea that the government can seize websites without due process, these websites were not given a chance to defend themselves in a court of law, a trial by jury, none of that. There are certain protections that we as American citizens are supposed to have under the law, under the Bill of Rights, and those protections don't seem to be recognized by these actions today. So those are some of the areas. The big area, and feel free to interrupt me if I keep going on here, but the big area that I see coming up in 2011 and 2012 is this collision between the failed healthcare policies of America and the failed fiscal policies. we see how this idea that you can manage degenerative disease through pharmaceuticals and through surgical procedures and through screening programs while ignoring the causes of disease, this system is failing, but it's also bankrupting the state and bankrupting the nation. And now at the same time, we have this Federal Reserve policy, this spending of trillions of dollars, this devaluing of the U.S. dollar that's happening through the creation of money. These two issues I see colliding. And when they collide, we are going to be facing, I predict, a very serious fiscal / healthcare crisis that will dwarf anything that we've seen up to this point. I mean, I think it will make the bailouts of late 2008, the Bear Stearns, the Goldman Sachs bailouts, seem tiny by comparison. We're facing a many tens of trillions of dollars fiscal emergency that involves our health. So that's my summary for you, Gary.
All right. I'm going to ask you to hold on, because behind all of this, we have to ask some basic questions. How much does it cost us individually and as a nation to be sick, especially from preventable illnesses, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, obesity? These we know how we get them, and we know how we can overcome them. There's nothing that the Surgeon General or any governmental agency has done, nor the White House, to create a healthy nation program. Now, if you're going to be poor, better be poor and healthy than poor and unhealthy. And it's like, if you're poor and cold, better be poor in a warm climate. It's better. But we don't seem at the national level to care about the outcome of what we do to people. So I'm concerned about that. I'm also concerned that historically the Republicans and conservatives wrapped freedom of choice issues around their mantra. They believed in smaller government, they believed in more personal responsibility, and they also believed that you should have the right to make intelligent choices. And yet how they've acted is just the opposite. They've created the largest government in history, the largest deficits in history. They are on all these military expeditions around the world. And now we're starting to see that parts of the Republican and conservative movement have shifted. The first shift was towards the Tea Party movement. And it was only the Tea Party movement gaining from not having this any kind of progressive or independent movement say, well, if you're confused and you don't any longer want to support that ideology, we are into health over here. And no one did that. So as a result, where they were being mocked and ridiculed by the Keith Obermans and everyone on the left as being stupid and racist and white and older and wealthy, had they gone to the Tea Party movement meetings that I did just to see for myself who was there, I saw people of all walks of life, all backgrounds, who had all types of views. I saw many Democrats and I saw libertarians. I saw people of all stripes. But the media, once again, in its ability to control the talking points, made it seem as if everyone in the Tea Party movement were these loons and these racists. It wasn't true. But all that did was, it really got the people who already were angry at the Republicans, Democrats, really seethed at the Democrats. I don't think anybody has even discussed how much the backlash against the Democrats came not because they liked the Republicans, but rather how much they absolutely didn't like the Democrats. On the Democratic side, historically, the Democrats have tried to provide social systems and agencies that would protect the interests of the common person. Historically, they were the pro-union and pro-equal rights and civil rights and equal pay for women doing men's work at the same level and environmental issues. And then they betrayed it all under Clinton. He became the really big corporate Democrat. Today, he would be called Blue Dog Democrat. We were told that he went right. He didn't go right. He was all right. All you had to do is look at his record in Arkansas to have seen that. So then the Democrats to tie themselves to that ideology couldn't really challenge it. If you did, you were considered an extremist. Suddenly you were the Marxist, the Leninist, you were the bomb thrower. You were way off in the fringes, in which case you were never invited into the media and you were given no forum. Even if you criticized what you considered the GATT and NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, you didn't have a forum anymore, and your funding got cut off, and you were marginalized. So what you ended up having during the last 20 years is you had one party, the corporate party, with two names, Democrat and Republican, and then under that, two bases, conservative and liberal. The trouble is, once you're involved in any ideology, you become that. It's very difficult to challenge the principles that you are a part of. It's very difficult if you're in a tribe to challenge the tribal leaders. And so they looked around, and there was Ralph Nader. And Nader had a message. But the Democrats, though they knew if they were liberal that Nader was right, and if they were conservative and libertarian, they knew he was right. They chose not to support him because of that fear. The more we see the truth in something, the more we are repelled by that truth. And we become even more reticent. I never will forget the time that I brought a woman to Washington, D.C. Her name is Marie McGovern. Another woman named Luann Panessi, and another family, the Ortega family, both New York City police officers from Brooklyn, and their son, Jonathan. And I got up, I was a keynote speaker in front of some 7,000 scientists at a World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine. This is just 2 years ago. And I said, rather than reading this report that I was supposed to present, I would rather show you real people. And so I brought him out. And there's Marie McGovern being very articulate and talking about her life today. And I said she had end-stage Alzheimer's. And there was just total silence. I said, and I've heard all day reports about, you know, if we can change the amyloid plaque formation with this drug and this genetic engineering that maybe we can prevent. And I said, we're not talking about preventing. We're talking about reversing something that no one in this room has ever seen. No one in America has ever seen. No one in medicine's ever seen. And I did it. And here she is. And then I reversed autism completely in Ortega, and I reversed menopause in Luann Panessi. So I said, here's three examples of what happened when we focus on what is possible and do it and prove it by the highest standards of science. All the medical documentation is there, step by step. And when I left the stage and they had finished speaking, and I only took half the time I was supposed to, I went out in the hallway. About 700 to 800 scientists and physicians came out, and they were just all over. What happened? How did you reverse it? And they're talking to these people. Then later, about 2 months later, I called each person, Ortega and Marie McGovern and Luann. I said, how many of the people actually followed up with you? Not one.
Wow.
Not one human being. Same thing with AIDS. When I took 100 people that had made major improvements and 12 who were cured, and let's spell that, C-U-R-E-D, cured by me, over a 16-month period using complete medical protocols, but holistic at the Tri-State Healing Center, we took 25 scientists, independent scientists. We had a whole panel of people, plus the doctors of the 100 individuals who came from all over America. Some were treated with Louis Hayes and others with detoxing. I had 12 people there. All the others came from different points. It took us a year to organize this, and we brought in all the media. And at the end of this discussion, I said, we're open for questions from the American media. Not one member of the American media, over 7,000 were invited, not one showed up. Not one. And yet we had something that they had never gotten before or since, curing and successfully treating and long-term follow-up, showing that with medical documentation, blood workups, everything done perfectly, because our independent panel of scientists had reviewed all this to give testimony to this. So this goes back to what Fritz Perl, the father of Gestalt, said, a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. So they didn't want to know about a real cure for AIDS so they could continue pumping $800 billion into this phantom, stupid industry. They didn't want to know about real cures for cancer, real cures for diabetes, or real cures for autism, or real cures for Alzheimer's, or good treatments for these, because that would go right against the paradigm. And their minds could not accept two truths simultaneously. So they locked themselves in, were loaded with the truth of the orthodox view, and the media was supporting them. The media always supports them. So that's where we're at today, Mike. I want you to take it from here and any of the things I've just discussed and take us further than this to show us that these answers are political, not just medical. You cannot change the medical system without changing the political system. You can't change the political system without changing the message. You can't change the message without the media. You can't change the media without having the right people who are willing to give the media an answer and challenge. Not with Chris Matthews and these other people. These people are an embarrassment as journalists, even talking. They're so biased, left and right. Do you think Glenn Beck's going to show a truth, or Bill O'Reilly? You can like them, but don't look for the truth in them. Your thoughts, please.
Well, you're right on track with this. The first thing that we need to realize, I think, those of us listening and as a nation, is that the entire debate about healthcare is taking place within this framework, this framework of assumption and scientific fraud and willful ignorance. As you mentioned, those physicians and researchers that you spoke to, who attended your speech, they would not follow up. And why? Why wouldn't they follow up? Because what you presented is opposed to their internal belief system, and that belief system is so strong that there are no cures for cancer, and hence they must keep searching for them, that AIDS cannot be effectively treated, that autism cannot be reversed, Alzheimer's can't be reversed, and so on. This framework is really just drilled into the minds of not just the consumers in America, but as you well know, into tomorrow's physicians through medical school training. It's also drilled into the minds of the members of the press, because the members of the press, typically, what I've found is that they are unable to evaluate the information they get from the drug company PR people or press releases or other sources that are highly biased. For example, if a drug company may send out a press release talking about the importance of vaccination and that for seasonal flu, and that press release may mention something along the lines of the seasonal flu is seasonal, so it comes and goes, therefore we need to vaccinate everyone at the peak of the season. Now, the journalist reading that press release will accept as truthful that statement without bothering to ask the question, the 800-pound gorilla standing in the room, so to speak, which is, why is the flu vaccine or the flu seasonal? Why is it seasonal? What does the position of the earth relative to the sun have to do with the success of a virus in propagating through a population? Because if you were to look at that question, and I know that you have, this is old hat to you, but to the journalists, if they were to look at that question, they would have to conclude something along the lines of, well, hey, the virus is circulating all year long. It's only during the winter season that people are vulnerable to the infection. So it's not the mere presence of the virus that causes the flu. Rather, it is this convergence of events, which, as you know, is the presence of the virus combined with immunosuppression, which can be caused by vitamin D deficiency, stress, and many, many other things, contamination with other pharmaceuticals, chemicals in the food supply, and so on. But journalists are, by and large, not asking intelligent questions. And part of that, and neither are legislators, by the way, those who pass these laws that we must operate under, they're not reading the bills, for one thing, because many times the bill language is very complex, very difficult to read. It cites 20 different documents and so on. Or it might just be 1,000 pages of text, and you know, who's going to actually go through it all? But also, our legislators, our lawmakers, are nutritionally illiterate. They really are. They don't understand the principles of health that are necessary to drive a nation towards sustainable self-care. And that is what we're lacking in this entire framework, this model of reality in which our nation operates. You called it control under the corporate party. And you're right. The corporations have broadcast a blueprint of reality, a framework under which the lawmakers are operating, the journalists are operating, the physicians, the conventional physicians at least are operating, and many consumers are operating. And that blueprint is highly misleading by design, I believe. It is misleading specifically to serve the financial interests of the corporations that benefit when people don't know that they can overcome serious degenerative disease if they only knew how. These corporations benefit when more people are sick. I'm sad to say it, because I want to believe in some level of inherent goodwill in human beings.
Did you see that? Did you see 60 yeah. Minutes last night?
I did not.
Okay, there was a segment on there about a woman who made $96 million for herself by getting the pharmaceutical, one of the big pharmaceutical companies in America, who pled guilty to all forms of criminal negligence, where they had this plant that was pumping out drugs that were mislabeled, wrong potencies, and hurting people. And
yes.
It was $700 million they had to spend. No one was found guilty. We have done the research this past year to show that all of the fines paid by pharmaceutical companies for all of their illegal and incredibly immoral acts have cost them over $1 billion, and yet many over $100 billion. Just one of those was almost $6 billion. $5.85 billion was for just the victims of the selective the drug that killed him. Oh, what was the antiarthritic drug? It was 2000.
What was it? Vioxx or anything?
Vioxx, yeah. It was
okay.
$5.85 billion they paid. No one went to jail. The head of the company got a raise, and the value of the stock went up. And I said
right.
at the time, only in America could you kill 60,000 citizens and get a raise. But this kind of duplicitous behavior is constant. So when you add up all the crimes they've committed, they still have all the power of being virtually perfect American corporatists. Nothing ever taints them at all. Yet you, myself, and the others who are in the alternative movement never will have that type of clean image, and we can't afford to make mistakes. We make a mistake and suddenly it's over, because they condemn the whole movement for whatever might happen that's wrong. So we have such a stupid way of looking at these problems now. And I want to invite our audience in to talk about this. Your concerns going into this new year, let us hear from you now. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Mike Adams is my guest. He does a program on the Progressive Radio Network every Saturday afternoon at 6 p.m. And you can also go to his website, which is easy to get to. What is it, Mike?
Naturalnews.com.
Okay, we'll get some calls up here in a moment, and we'll hear what the people in the audience have to say. But if you see what I'm saying, we have two standards. If someone right now is hungry and unemployed and they steal a sandwich, they could go to jail. But when you end up creating by intent a drug that doesn't do any good and kills people, and you take thousands of lives, tens of thousands of lives, you pay a fine and everything's good and starts all over again, and you're cleaned up. You go through this economic, political, news media shower, and all the muck and grime are washed away.
In the case of Pfizer, remember, too, they even created a shell company to take the hit for them. So you had this other entity taking the charge and being found guilty, but the main corporation continued on with a clean slate and do business with the government.
Yep. Well, I think we have a caller here. Let's say hello and see who we've got on there. I'm looking. Lainey.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Your thoughts,
Hi, Lainey.
Please.
Yes, I'm listening to everything that you are saying, and I think there's a lot of truth. I think I'm a person who believes in both the naturalistic approach or holistic approach as well as conventional. But more importantly, when we talk about corporations being responsible, I completely agree with what you all are saying. I'm just wondering, how do we change this? How to reverse the fact that people are not held accountable for the actions that they commit?
I believe that we should take away the protection that a corporation has if they're found in criminal violation, that then the board of directors and the major stockholders are the responsible parties, you know, and then watch to see what happens. Then
are they functioning? I'm sorry, are they functioning under immunity?
Yes, you cannot sue an individual within a corporation for what the corporation does.
Right, and much like the government, you can't sue an individual
that's
child
correct.
Protective service worker, so they're allowed to do what they're doing. Okay,
how do we as a
nation begin to reverse that process? Because I'm on board. Let's do it. So
okay,
we got to organize.
All right, then how we have to do it is tomorrow I'm going to do a commentary at noon, and in that commentary, I will share with you what we have to do politically to get the 44% of Americans, that's more than the Democrats and Republicans combined, to begin to work together, to start with independent and grassroots efforts to get rid of all this power that they have. So we can then get rid of those laws and put laws in effect that protect us. We just don't have that. Mike, your thoughts?
There is an effort underway in the Department of Justice to attempt to go after some of the CEOs, I understand, of these drug companies. But to be able to pierce that corporate veil, as you mentioned, is legally very difficult right now. So, yes, that change is necessary. However, the corporations, of course, will strongly resist it. And sadly, as we know, so much of what goes on in Congress today is driven or at least strongly influenced by the corporate interests. So it seems to me, from a pragmatic point of view, unlikely that we can make that happen without extreme grassroots pressure.
We can't. We have to be realistic. And the reality is that we must stop voting Democrat or Republican completely. We must stop reform. Reform has never worked. If we really cared about our democracy, we would ban all private contributions to any campaign and only have a 3-month election cycle where everyone submits what they consider their qualifications, and then they have to answer each of the essential questions for that particular office. What would you do? What are your positions? So they have their positions papers brought forward. Each one of those people then can have a chance, whether they're a cab driver, a social worker, a school teacher, without any money, to have their point of view shared. Then you have national debates where each person is given an opportunity to share their points of view. We then would have a simple lottery system to take it from as many that would be applying to those that the public then believes are most qualified. Then we would have those final people in the last 4 weeks of election. That way you have no corporations, you have no lobbyists, you have no special interest groups at all able to influence an election. Right now, that's the only way to do it. Now, we're not going to get there because the existing people in power will not allow that. And half of their time in Congress is spent gaining a momentum for the next election cycle, hence compromising themselves by allowing access so they can affect legislation. That's how they passed this terrible food bill that will outlaw in the next couple of years all organic farming. And that's why in Europe, starting April the 1st, in all of the European Union countries, 17 now, you'll have no vitamins or minerals or herbal supplements that we currently have, and 1,100 are going to be banned outright forever, and the rest will be in tiny doses that won't be effective because They don't want competition. And the pharmaceutical companies know who to bring on their side. Look at all their boards of directors. Look at all their lobbyists. They're former legislators. They're former lawmakers. So we have to get back to where America is actually governed by its people, not this ruling elite, completely compromised group of individuals. And the media sucks up to these people because that's where the money comes from. What do you think happens when they spend $1 billion on a campaign? The media gets most of it. So the media has a vested interest in keeping the status quo. So if you had the Constitutionalist, the Peace Party, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, if you had the progressives all working together, you would have a majority. And then you could vote for, get people to run for office who truly represented the people. That will take another whole election cycle. Next, there'll be, I predict, Hillary Clinton will be the next president. I believe Sarah Palin will split the conservatives from the Republicans. And then you end up with the worst of all cases. And then it'll take another downsize in the American lifestyle, another great series of losses, more infringement upon our freedoms, to where we are absolutely a police state. If you think it's bad now, as bad as these clowns at the TSA are, and when they had a four-year-old boy take his braces off, as if he was going to have to crawl through security, some of these groveling pigs would, you know, feel big and strong and tough. These people are, I won't fly anymore because of this. I just say, screw it. I'd rather drive. I don't care what the inconvenience. Because the moment we are that humiliated, the moment someone can grope you sexually and say, well, tough, you want to complain, we'll arrest you. You want to know what happens when you're arrested? We can do anything to you. Want to stun you? Shoot you? Oh, didn't they stun a woman to death in Phoenix? Yeah, they get away with it? Absolutely. They can get away with anything. That's what happens in a police state. And if you doubt me, go back and read the history of Mussolini and the history of his Black Shirt Party and the beginning of the fascist movement when fascism combined the power of the state with corporate power. That's fascism, and that's what you have today in the United States. But the American people right now are just asleep, as if they don't care. And those who do care are not organized. So A, you got to care, and B, you got to get organized. Organize to the grassroots level. Take all your money out of any one of these banks, Bank America, Citibank, take your money out, put it in a savings loan, small, or a credit bank. Also, stop buying at Walmart and all your national brands. Stop buying national brands. Stop buying anything made in China. If it's not made in America, you don't buy it. And then support local food co-ops and support local movements. That's how we take America back. It'll take us about 6 to 8 years. Hope that answers your question. Mike, your thoughts, please.
Well, I think one of the most important things we can do today for our nation and for our own freedom, as well as health, is to grow our own food. Not 100%. Most people can't do that. But we can supplement our diets with food grown in our backyards and even in our front yards. What an amazing statement to make in your community to turn your previously pesticide-ridden front lawn into a garden where you're creating not just food,
Mike,
but medicine.
We have Donnie from Clinton Township. Where's Clinton Township? Which state? Donnie, you're on the phone. Donnie, yes. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Clinton Township, Michigan. It's about 10 miles from Detroit.
Okay. You have a question or a thought for us, please?
I have a thought. With the information out nowadays, there is just so much available for everyone to wake up and turn off the television, get on the Internet, and start reading books and things. People are not responsible enough nowadays, and they're still dependent on all these systems, which are disempowering systems. You guys are doing a great job in spreading the word of consciousness and common sense and what's best. You're not saying what's right or wrong. You're saying what's best. Just using common sense, and I really appreciate that. Every day in my yoga classes that I teach, I'm sending a message to people to become more responsible, using self-care rather than dependent on things outside themselves. And a lot of them are doing that. And they're coming in every day and saying, I wish I'd have been doing this my whole life. I feel like I'm now in control of my life. And as people start to support themselves, these other organizations just start to dwindle down because there's no one to support them. I'm not really thinking that trying to change the outside world is the biggest way to go about it, but it's more about an inside world that needs to be changed with each individual.
I appreciate those thoughts. One last call from Al from Maryland. Al, you're on the line.
Hello, how you doing, Gary? Hello?
Doing good. We got about a minute and a half.
Thank you very much. My quick question is this. My wife just had a baby after 3 C-sections. She was told we'll never be able to have it. We had to go underground, literally, to have this child naturally. All the hospitals in the neighborhood would deny us from having from them performing the natural birth there. We wouldn't allow the midwives there, so we had to actually do the birth at home. And all we got from doctors was, it never happened, you'll die, the baby will die, it never happened, never happened. And she delivered the baby perfectly within 4 minutes, pushed him out. And CNN actually did an article on it called Mom Defies Doctor, Has Baby Her Way. My thing is, how can, and the things she had to go through, how can you stop this? I mean, I actually, the doctors didn't admit it. It was the fact of their time and the insurance wouldn't
cover
it. All right,
let's let Mike Adams finish up with that answer.
Go.
Mike.
Well, that's a great question. Congratulations on achieving natural childbirth.
Thank you.
Sounds like it went very well. Much of our natural rights are now being forced to go underground. What you just described with natural childbirth is the same as what's happening with raw milk, of course. The idea that you could be criminalized for milking a cow and trading that milk with your neighbor for some dollars or barter items in exchange, the idea that that could be a crime goes against the very foundations of our nation. It also violates natural law, what I consider natural law, what some people call God's law, or the rules that we're all born with. And much of what's going on is a violation of these natural rights, the right to control your own body, the right to engage in free commerce, the right to have access to food and medicine, especially if you grow it yourself or your neighbors grow it and want to trade with you. This is what we must stand up against today. This is the greatest key or core threat to our future, is that our governments and regulatory bodies would take away or impose upon our natural rights.
Mike Adams, we're out of time. Thank you very much, Mike. I look forward to sharing more with you on upcoming programs.
Thank you, Gary. Always great to join you.
And
take
you
care.
Can listen to Mike Adams' show every Saturday on the Progressive Radio Network at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Gary Knoll. Have a nice day, everyone.
Produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.
Close my eyes at night and wonder what would I be without you in my life. Everything